In his new book, The Last of the President's Men, award-winning journalist and best-selling author Bob Woodward reveals the untold story of Alexander Butterfield, the Nixon aide who disclosed the secret White House taping system that led to Nixon's resignation. This is the story of a mysterious relationship that changed history, told from the vantage point of someone who sat in the office adjacent to the most powerful man in the world. Woodward's fifth book on President Nixon completes the missing piece of the puzzle and seeks to answer the questions: why would one of Nixon's closest aides divulge a devastating secret, and what allowed Nixon to let this aide get so close? Bob Woodward is an associate editor at The Washington Post, where he has worked for 44 years. He has shared in two Pulitzer Prizes, first for the Post's coverage of the Watergate scandal with Carl Bernstein, and later for coverage of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. It's a great pleasure to welcome Bob Woodward back to the roundtable. Bob, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
There's a quote in the book jacket from Alexander Butterfield: there's more to the story of Nixon. What did you want to tell of that story? And have you always realized that there was this portion of the story that had not been told?
No, it kind of demonstrates the thesis, history is never over. And I thought I was done writing about Nixon, ran into Butterfield a couple of years ago. We started talking, realized he'd never told his story, tried to write his memoir. It was rejected by the publisher. Then I visited him at his home in California, and he had 20 boxes of documents, some of them very surprising, even shocking. And so you see that even though we have this intimate narrative from Nixon's tapes, that the power of a witness, somebody who's there, had the office right next to Nixon for 3 years, did Nixon's bidding, was the one first to see Nixon in the morning, the last to see him at night, that there is a new dimension, and there is more particularly on the issue of managing the Vietnam War.
What was it about the relationship that you found fascinating?
That Butterfield was brought in by Nixon's top aide, Haldeman, and the first month, Haldeman kept telling Butterfield, you know, Nixon doesn't like to meet new people. It makes him nervous, so you've got to hide. So he's working in the West Wing of the office, and he's kind of running and hiding, staying out of sight. He finally meets Nixon. Nixon can't say an intelligible word during that first meeting. Then the next encounter, Nixon's quite angry and rude to Butterfield. He's thinking he's going to leave the White House staff, and then they kind of make up, and he becomes this indispensable do-all person, see-all person. It's the kind of intimacy that you rarely get, and the book is really about Nixon, because Butterfield is always reflecting, Nixon did this, he said this, this was what was going on, and it's new and it's fresh. And I thought, oh, come on, we know Nixon, but we don't, we did not.
There are many things in the book that I found surprising. One of them is that he became, Butterfield became almost the spokesman for Nixon to his own wife.
Yeah, exactly. one of the things Butterfield was assigned, Haldeman in the early days said to Butterfield, well, Pat Nixon, the first lady, hates me, hates Haldeman, because he was always, when there was a dispute with Richard Nixon, would always take Nixon's side, of course. That's not surprising. So we need a new person to have the Pat account. And it went to Butterfield, and he would meet with her for an hour, a couple of times a week. And there would be these interchanges. For instance, Nixon liked certain music, New Orleans music, and Pat Nixon liked the Air Force strolling strings. And she was kept saying to Butterfield, can't we get something like the strolling strings that play softer music? And Nixon wouldn't hear of it. And then finally, a couple of times, she got it. On another occasion, one of the odd things Nixon did at state dinners, he gave Butterfield a list, the guest list, and checked five people and said, I only want to talk to these five people. And then there was this complex minuet that they engaged in to make sure Nixon would only meet Arnold Palmer or Claire Booth Luce, who would be checked off, and other people would be elbowed out of the way. He didn't, and as he told Butterfield, he said, I don't want to see these SOBs who are putting their face in mine. So then Nixon said to Butterfield, go to Pat and see if she wants to do this. And Pat was just, wait, you know, you can't be serious. And Butterfield said, yes. And she said, no, I like to meet everyone.
You say, as you're writing about the state dinner in particular, you say that Butterfield always felt that his job was more or less on the line.
Yeah. Nixon would do things like say, okay, Alex, did you watch the salad course? And Butterfield, no. And Nixon would say, I timed it. It took the waiters 10 minutes to serve the salad. We're not going to have salad at state dinners anymore. And if we have, you know, over a certain number. And Butterfield's thinking, my God, I'm not doing my job. I'm not timing the salad course.
You have written so much about this man. So in many ways, I assume that his account just gives more credence to what you have known all along, and some of his peculiarities and the type of guy that he was. But it also seems that there were things that genuinely surprised you.
Yes, and again, I think the one of the most important things that goes on is war. Clearly, it defines who we are, excuse me, to the world and to ourselves. And Nixon's management of the Vietnam War, there's material in here that where Nixon in his own handwriting says we've achieved zilch with 3 years of bombing. 2.9 million tons of bombs dropped on Nixon's orders. And then he continues the bombing for the last year of his first term because it's popular and it indicates that he's going to win re-election with the popularity of the bombing. And of course, he didn't want to face up to the fact that the war was effectively lost already.
You refer to something toward the center of the book as the Kissinger problem. Part of this was Kissinger's tardiness, which Butterfield was supposed to be dealing with. Talk a little bit about the Kissinger problem.
Well, as Nixon saw it, and you know, it sounds like it was valid. Nixon calls Butterfield in, and you know, Butterfield has to take notes, and I reprint Butterfield's handwritten notes from this discussion. And Nixon says Kissinger's always late. He barges into the Oval Office. He says he needs 5 minutes, and he takes 20. And then it literally, Nixon says, you know, there was one time where we had to call Kissinger 7 times before he came. Another time, 3 times. And you look at this and you say, now, wait a minute, why doesn't Nixon directly talk to Kissinger and say, you can't be late anymore? But what Nixon wants to do is step around it, wants to get Butterfield to carry this message. And it is part of Nixon's isolation. He doesn't want to deal with people. He wants to be alone. And the time and time again, Nixon will leave the Oval Office at 6:30 and not go up to the residence, but go over to his office in the executive office building and put his feet up on a stool, keep his jacket on, take notes on his yellow legal pad, have his manservant, Manola, cook him dinner alone, eats alone. And, you know, where is the joy in this? Where is the relaxation? Where is the humanity? Too often it seems to be missing.
We are talking to Bob Woodward. The name of the new book is The Last of the President's Men. It is published by Simon and Schuster. You talk in the book about how the president in 1971 in February wants a taping system installed. And ultimately it became the job of Alexander Butterfield to make sure this happened, because this, as you write, was sort of the chain of command was Nixon to Haldeman to Butterfield, although by at this point Butterfield was getting closer and often there would be just direct orders.
Yes, and they gave Butterfield the office right next to Nixon, moved Haldeman out over to a corner office. So, and you know, clearly Butterfield was, if you are president, you want somebody like this who will make sure they can, you know, things will happen.
Right.
That the notes are taken about Kissinger's non-performance and his tendency to not show up on time. So the level of intimacy here is quite surprising.
And as you say, that Butterfield was very good at trying to alleviate Nixon's anxieties, which were many.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't alleviate all of them because he had, Nixon was watching everything and was, you know, there these deceptions, there's this self-deception. Nixon actually says at one point to one of his aides, well, after Butterfield disclosed the taping system, maybe Butterfield did us a favor, thinking that these tapes might vindicate Nixon. Of course, they did exactly the opposite. They sunk his presidency. Not just one tape. I mean, dozens and dozens and crimes and lies and rages. It's not a pretty picture.
You write of the first time that this comes up and Butterfield and Haldeman are talking about it, and it becomes obvious that the president wants this taping system in the Oval Office and on the telephones and in the cabinet room and the Lincoln sitting room telephone and to have a really good system that works. And initially this is kind of chalked up to another crazy idea that Richard Nixon has that they put down in a legal pad and hopefully will go away.
Well, no, this wasn't going to go away. I mean, immediately Butterfield called the Secret Service technicians. Again, one of Butterfield's jobs was to be liaison with the Secret Service. And he called Al Wong, who was the chief technician for the Secret Service, and said, you know, install this in a weekend. I mean, they put 5 microphones in Nixon's desk in the Oval Office.
But when it came to the taping, there, and I think there's a line in the book where you say that there was really no discussion about what the risks would be of such a taping system, or even what the merits of a taping system would be.
Yes, exactly. But this stems from a belief that Nixon had that he was immune. He's president. He's got all the power. No one is going to be able to challenge him. No one's going to find out about his secret taping system. No one's going to find out about the Watergate cover-up. No one's going to find out about other burglaries and wiretaps and so forth. So it came from that sense Nixon had, I'm at the top. I am totally empowered. And of course, that's the problem. Too many crimes, too many lies, and we don't have a system where the president is the king.
What did Butterfield, because you write about this, what did Butterfield make of the taping system and how conscious people were when they were talking, knowing that it existed and was there?
Well, see, most people didn't know, like Henry Kissinger didn't know.
Right.
And So the Butterfield, after he leaves the White House, after the first year, becomes Federal Aviation Administrator. And the Watergate hearings are going on, being televised. You realize that, and Butterfield talks about this, said, I'm thinking about the tapes all the time, because there's this dispute between Nixon's denials and the assertions, particularly of John Dean, his counsel, that Nixon was running involved in the cover-up. And so all of a sudden there's this referee that appears, the tapes.
As things started to unwind and fall apart for the administration, did Butterfield become closer, or did he become ostracized?
Well, he was ostracized. I mean, Rosemary Woods, Nixon's private attorney, would call Butterfield and berate him and say, you were always on the other side. And so there was a lot of anger, and Butterfield moved to California and made a new life for himself where he still lives.
Was he surprised by what unfolded, in the sense of what ultimately came to light, or did he have a front seat to it?
Well, he was sure that once the tapes got out, that it was going to show that Nixon had been lying and was running the cover-up, because Butterfield, who was not involved in Watergate and was not in those discussions and meetings, knew the system. And the system was Nixon and Haldeman are running everything. All decisions go through them. So why would Watergate be different? And, of course, from what we know now from the tapes, Butterfield had it right.
How much did Butterfield struggle in his position and the decisions that he had to make? I mean, it seems in the book that this is something that really stayed with him, and I don't know if haunted is too strong of a word.
Well, it did haunt him for a while, and there's a 30-page section in the book which is kind of the psychodrama inside Butterfield's head, whether to reveal the taping system. And he could have got a lawyer when the investigators called him for a closed-door session in July 1973, but you know, he didn't do that, and he decided he's going to answer a direct question. And it was finally asked by Republican minority counsel, who had been an FBI agent for years.
Give us an idea of the conversation you had with Butterfield and how you worked with him to write the book.
It started gradually, and I said, I want to look at these things. I want to interview you. And then finally I just said, look, this story should be told. You're not going to tell it. He agreed. He gave me total editorial control. He didn't approve the book and only read it when it was published.
And his reaction?
He liked it. He made the point, as I think anyone would, that he might have written some parts a little differently and emphasized some other things, but he understood. I'm not a ghostwriter. I'm looking at this, his story and these documents, in the context of everything else. I interviewed other people, and it's a pretty, what's interesting is it's all documented or on the record from Butterfield or other people. So it's not only the other side of Watergate, it's the other side of the taping system. It has a kind of authenticity to it, I hope.
The name of the book is The Last of the President's Men. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Bob Woodward, a great pleasure to have you back on the program.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Last of the President's Men. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.